All right. Welcome to another episode of Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. I am your host, Eric Thomas. Today, I am joined by Dr. Luciana Berti, the Director of Capital Programs and Environmental Affairs from Massachusetts Port Authority. And I'm excited about this conversation today. And Luciana, when you agreed to join me, because I think most people in the U.S., they rely on resources that organizations like yours provide to them, but they aren't necessarily familiar with how those facilities come together and how they operate. So thank you so much for joining today and giving us a closer look under the hood as far as what your team is up to.
Thank you, Eric, for inviting me. I'm very excited to be part of the Digital Builder and be part of your podcast. I'm always very happy to share our knowledge, our news, and our information with anyone. So again, thank you for inviting me here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy to hear you're excited as I am. And I know you actually just won an award, as you had shared with me when we last spoke. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, sure. I won an award from the Construction Institute on the Innovation Award. It's one of the reasons is the way I'm bringing innovation in our construction industry. So I'm very passionate about it. I've been working on innovation and technology and interaction of innovation and technology in the built industry since 2004. I was surprised. It was a welcome recognition. So thank you for bringing that one up. It's a very exciting moment, I guess.
Well, congratulations again. And I feel like that just cements that we're going to have a great conversation today. But to start us off, can you take a moment to describe what the Port Authority is and what are those resources that your organization brings to the state of Massachusetts?
Definitely. I'm more than happy to do so. Massport is, in some ways, Boston Logan. That's probably the biggest airport and the one that we are mainly recognized for. But we are also the Flynn Cruise Port Boston, the Conley Container Terminal. We have also Worcester Regional Airport and Ascom Field. In addition of all of this, we also have a robust real estate portfolio with more than 400 acres of land that we manage in Charleston, in East Boston, and South Boston. We exist to connect the Massachusetts with New England, with the world, and we are very proud and trying to do it safely, securely, and efficiently. Now, this is Massport. If we look at capital program, that's the department that I lead. The mission of our department is to try to excel in delivery project by enhancing the customer experience. We do all the programming, design, and construction, and trying to do it again in a safe, efficient, and sustainable manner. And obviously, using technology is a big aspect of it.
Well, and I appreciate that overview. And you made a really wonderful point as far as the broader context of the people that your team touches, because Boston Logan International Airport, so it's not just Massachusetts that's impacted by the work that you're doing. There's a broader conversation and a broader importance. So I appreciate setting that baseline. And so as your role as director, can you tell me, what is a day in the life like? What do you focus on and where do you spend the most of your attention?
So my day starts pretty early, obviously, as every construction. So we do a 7:30 a.m. call with my executive management team. Again, it's a call. A lot of the construction, the job sites are already open. It's a quick meeting. It doesn't last more than 15 minutes. But we talk about what's happening that day or what's going to happen at that week amongst the major project. It mirrors something that started by the aviation department and the aviation director at Franny after 9/11, where all airlines, they all get together and they discuss what's happening on that day. Very beneficial, and was hugely beneficial during COVID, because during both the 7:30 call and the 8:30, the aviation security briefing, there was so much information that needed to be shared that was very critical and needed to be timely shared. And having this touch point, a daily touch point, is important. And then the 9 o'clock, every day is a different day, from a meeting with the job site visit, meeting with the director. My role, and I see myself mainly as a link between my very talented team. I have a team of roughly 100 people, and the CEO. So I'm between my project manager, my delivery team, and then the CEO or my client or the board of director. So in meetings, I'm always the one that asks, why can we do this things differently? Why don't we do it this way? Why don't we look at technology? So instead of bringing my project management expertise, I'll bring these different sets of ideas. And I challenge, which I think it's important to make projects stronger.
And I think that that daily touch point does make a bunch of sense when you consider the scope and scale of everything that is happening under, you know, your organization that you're focused on. So I definitely don't have that in my own day-to-day, but I also don't oversee the magnitude of what you're touching. But one point you mentioned earlier, I'd really like to ask a follow-up question, and it's tied to passenger experience. And I think everybody listening likely has a little bit of thoughtfulness behind what does it look like when you're considering the number of people that roll through the doors of all the facilities that you touch. And so can you tell me a little bit more about that passion for, you know, understanding and improving that experience in all the facilities you maintain?
Yes, serving our customer, it's fundamental to us. It's fundamental to me as a delivery head, but it's also fundamental to Massport as a whole. Ultimately, Capital Program, which is my department, has a client, which is our aviation and maritime unit, but we have customer. To me, there is a big difference between client and customer. Customer are the passenger, and we have millions of passengers that they come through all our facilities. Again, you were mentioning we have Logan, so we have aviation passenger, but also we have the cruise. So we have cruise passengers. And to me, the serving piece is critical. So I'm a huge lean thinker. So something that I ask, especially to a new project manager, it's what in lean is called the Gemba walk. The Gemba walk is really stay somewhere and look at what is the behavior of the passenger. COVID changed behavior of the passenger. Any major event is changing how passenger behaves. And I truly enjoy sitting in a corner of any terminal and then looking in how the passenger moves. And then when a project manager embraces and starts a new project, I tell them, just go sit down for half an hour. It's not half an hour wasted. Look at how families behave. You know, even the type of demographic that we are serving is very different, diverse. So let's try to understand, is a location of a specific element of the terminal, it's not very clear. Do we need more signage? Do we need less signage? Do we have too much signage that is becoming confusing? So having taken the time to just step back and look, to me, it's fascinating. And again, I always recommend and suggest new project manager, but even experienced project manager that are doing new projects, is to just go and do the Gemba walk, just experience the process. And that's how I think we can eliminating all the assumption, oh, I've done this 10 years ago. Guess what? The passenger has changed in 10 years. So we should always look at new ways of addressing the needs.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, airports are probably one of the best people-watching places you can spend time in. And so I appreciate that extra layer that you're considering, because it's not just that passive, when I'm traveling, I'm watching people because I'm like, this is interesting. But there's the, how are people using the facility? And you made a point there with the diversity of the passenger types too, because you're absolutely right. And we see this with software development and all other areas where, depending on your background, you may interpret what's presented to you in a very different way. And so being able to see that in the real world should hopefully, make its way back to your design decisions, regardless of the scale you're at. And I just have to chuckle, you mentioned signage as well. So I have a degree in scientific and technical communication. That's kind of how I started my journey before I got my first gig as a proposal writer at a general contractor. And I remember after I started learning more about TechCom and signage in particular, and visiting airports where the signage isn't good still brings me considerable frustration, because I know, I'm like, this doesn't have to be this bad. So I appreciate your focus on ensuring clarity as you navigate the different spaces.
Yeah, it is it's a fascinating element. I always enjoy, every project has my spots, Luciana spots. So if people, I tell them, if you don't know where am I, I'm here. So it is fascinating. And I think it's very helpful because, as you mentioned, it's always, when I walk and then I have a badge, people ask me questions, say, oh, where do I go? So I help them But then I always stop and think, okay, why did that person, you know, there are some people that it's easier for them to ask another human being, but why did that person ask me, what can I do from a design perspective to make sure that next time it's so easy that, and I'm an architect, I think the space should be speaking. So in an ideal world, signs should not be even there, but I understand reality is very different. But there is a lot of work that we can do in architecture that should lead the passenger to where they want to go. It should be at least clear. Yeah. And we do a lot of things. So something that is we brought on board is what we call it the passenger ready team walk. So before any project opens, we set up a team of people that have no work on that project. Because, you know, once you are in a project, you get so familiar that you don't even see what's missing, right? So we started in 2016, 2017. There is a team that we select from other facilities. So if it's a terminal, I take someone from operation in maritime or other people that have no work. And we give them, we want to make sure that the terminal or the piece of facility that we're about to open, usually 30 days before we open, we give them like a cheat sheet, say, okay, you are a passenger, you're going from here to here. We pair with someone who was part of the project and we'll see if they can even find, right? Usually we have done one recently from the checkpoint to the terminal, from the terminal to get your bags and get out on the road to pick up a passenger or something. And we don't give any suggestion. We just take note, we take picture. I cannot tell you how beneficial this is. Once I did it and I'm like, I think there is a sign missing here. And we did not have the time to build the sign. Day three, a passenger asked, where do I go here? I'm like, see, I knew it. Those are things that make us better. Other things that we do pre-COVID, actually, for the new Terminal E, we were able to bring in, you know, a reflection room, the design of a reflection room, of a sensory room for children and adult, young adult within the spectrum, a mother's room. In 2015, we had like pods for mother's room that were plugged into the terminal. Now we are incorporating. And this is, again, to touch upon all the diversity of passengers that we have. The sensory room, it's very close to my heart. I have a daughter who's very stressed when she travels, to the point that sometimes she can get panic attacks. And there are other passenger children or young adults that have the same anxiety when they have to get in an enclosed environment, which can be the terminal or the airplane. So on the Terminal E, we're going to be opening our first sensory room, which is really dedicated, and is going to have a little simulator room, which is dedicated to exactly those type of experience, especially Terminal E is the terminal where the shortest flight, it's 7 hours. So I'm sure that there is a lot of needs. So those are all things that we care as an authority to address all the diversity of the passenger that we have and try to do it better. We'll do first time, we know hopefully the sensory room becomes something that we replicate in other terminal. We're doing it. And then if it goes well, if we can continuously improve on how to do it next time and how to do it better, you know.
The stress levels too, it kind of comes back to even the signage conversation that we're talking about. Like, it's one thing for your team to walk through the terminal, regardless if they're familiar with the project or not, in a setting where they don't actually need to get on a plane and go to another country and they need to get there in 15 minutes kind of situation. And so having more understanding of what does it take to ensure that this is easy to navigate, especially if somebody is not a comfortable traveler or not a common traveler? Because yeah, I can think exactly back to the first time I traveled internationally to now. The first time I was stressed out. It was my passport, was customs like, I don't know anything. And now I'm like, okay, cool. Hey, here's my stuff. Can I go in there now? And that comes with time But having that equitable consideration for how that space impacts all the different people, that's encouraging to hear. So I appreciate you sharing that. And it actually kind of pivots into my next question, where you were alluding to the trial moment right now of that space to see if you deploy it to additional parts of your facilities. And I think that can apply to technology. And so that was partly why I was excited about this conversation too, because I worked as a federal proposal manager for a number of years. And so I understand deeply, sometimes painfully, how complex it can be to implement change into new technology, especially if the requirements haven't been set up from the beginning to empower you to do that. And so with that complexity nuance in mind, I'm really interested in hearing about some of the biggest challenges or most common challenges that you're seeing when bringing new methodologies or technology to your projects.
I think a lot of the challenges, the main challenges is not really the technology per se in some way, but is actually make it up and implementation. So especially in critical and projects like our airport or our project. And when I talk about teams, I'm mentioning the holistically. So we're talking about our manager. When I talk, I will be talking about manager. It's my manager, it's consultant manager, and the contractor manager. So what I have noticed in the last probably 20 years that I'm trying to bring in the new technologies is that you have two sets of people working on project. There are those PM whose role is just to deliver a project. Get the things done and get it done. So the more comfortable they are in whatever they have done before, which oftentimes is not technology, they're going to be pushing. So they're going to have those people that they are open, but not really on their project, on other people's projects, right? They are open to the idea, but they're a little reluctant to use the technology. And then you have these other sets of people that are all techie, that in some way know little about the real process, how really things happen on the job site. And they want and they try to force technology at all costs. So I think it's, I find oftentimes that I need to balance those two elements and ask the question and say, okay, what technology, okay, we see the problem and I see that there is a technology that might help us not to address fully. Why don't we do that? So the challenge and the risk is that technology will never eliminate risk on projects, but we need to be able to manage and find the balance between what is too risky and what is okay that spur innovation. Because if we are not ready to do something new, something different, innovation will not happen. So we need to get comfortable on doing something a little different. At the same time, we need to be okay that even if we do something different, even if it's not perfect, it's good. I always like something that I tell my staff. I like to focus on the learning, not on the winning. Focus on the learning, not on the winning. That means that even a failed pilot could be a success because you're learning. Oftentimes, people want to They're afraid of doing pilot because they're afraid that something will go and there is a finger pointing type of situation. I truly believe that innovation and technology can be successful if we, the leadership, allows a safe environment in which try it. And when I talk about safe environment, I always say my role as a director is to build a safety net underneath those teams who are trying something new and make sure that they know they can do something risky from a technology perspective, even from a process perspective, because they know if they fall, we are all here to help and to support and to make sure that at the end, the project is still a success. I strongly believe that it's the role of the owners to do that. A lot of companies are afraid to bring innovations to owners because they are afraid that if they fail, they get blamed. Those are words that I highly uncomfortable with using. I don't like blaming. I don't like. So if we put our learning hats instead of the winning hats. I know everyone wants to win, but we can redefine what does winning really means. I think society as a whole, but the technology, the design and construction industry can be much better.
Yeah, I think the point you made about balancing those priorities is so spot on as well. And as you consider those who've been in industry for a long time and have that knowledge, we have to make sure we're giving opportunities for them to bring that knowledge to the tech-excited people and vice versa. And those relationships that we get to build in those environments when they're set up well, I think benefit everybody, because the one that might be a little more hesitant to technology, largely just because they haven't had the opportunity to see it in person and see that runway or have a outdated perspective of a tool that's evolved considerably in the last decade.
I can give you a quick funny story of a project. So we have a big project that is it's ongoing, and there was a very good project manager from the contractor, and during they were showing to us a safety tool, and they were showing some tools that they were going to use. So I said, you know, let's call it Bob, do you know if your company has the spot dog? So he looked like, what are you talking about? I'm like, listen, I'm sure your company is big enough. I would love to have one, I told him, but I'm sure your company has it. He said, I'm not sure. You know, I said, okay, Bob, please go back. Come back to me next week.
Make some phone calls.
Make a phone call. He came back and the week after. And because I said, you know, we can put the camera on top. We can use it for safety walks. And he came back and he said, Luciano, how did you know that we have one? I said, listen, it doesn't cost too much money, but we actually did use it. So having a person that push a little bit,
yeah,
gently, and it also helps to me help this Bob, his name is not Bob, this Bob, to open his ideas on using a technology on his project. So hopefully he will use it on the next project.
Yeah, you've created that opportunity for him to consider it, especially since it was so clear that you wanted it. But everything else that you've been saying in this point, it just maps back to culture and intention. And I've worked in environments where there wasn't that supportive safety net for trying things and making a mistake that you learn from. I mean, obviously, if you continue making the same mistake over and over and over again, there's
that's a
different
challenge.
Conversation.
We have a different conversation.
You gotta have. But if those mistakes are happening under the banner of innovative decision making, hopefully that will either benefit the owner or the customer or a blend of both. I think if you have those conversations in the right way, not only do you give people runway to try different things, but you're going to start hearing more new ideas too. People are going to come to you with them instead of that uncertainty of, is it okay if I bring this idea up because we've never done it before? I know our margins are narrow. Is this a risk? You can still have that conversation in a productive way. And even if it doesn't show up on that project, it might show up on the next one. You're starting to plant those seeds and consider, you know, what fits and how your team can benefit from it. So how do you manage all of these requirements and expectations from the many stakeholders that you're beholden to or are even just seeing all the projects you have? Because, I mean, the public eye is obviously there. They're seeing the airport facilities. They're seeing the construction. They use these every day. So how do you balance the expectations from those that set the standards for your organization alongside those of the general public and the people using the facilities you create?
That's actually one of the aspects that fascinates me the most. The fact that we are in a highly regulated environment. The public procurement and the public projects, which we are not publicly funded, but we have to obey to our Massachusetts general law requirement, give us some restriction. And then we have the FAA and the TSA and all these other requirements. And it fascinates me because I always say, if we can be successful within all these limitation, then even for more reason, all this public, private sector, they should be like 10 times more innovative. And oftentimes realize that I'm the most innovative one. I'm like, people, let's get going. Let's work together on this. But it is like a puzzle, right? To me, all these requirements are part of something that we have to deal with. It's just part of our reality. And we need to take it that way. But the more we educate, This is where the planning piece comes on board. Because we are highly regulated, the more planning we do in advance, the faster and the easier comes down the road. And I am highly focused on the technology, but also technology, again, not for the sake of technology, but also the process improvement, so lean. I always, every project, I always tell them, it's like our system, we should have a conversation of what should, can, will, did, and learn. This is the five conversation of the last planner system. Let's plan what should happen, what can happen, what will happen, if did happen, and then what did we learn for the next time? The collaboration is critical. So the more we bring in the TSA and the FAA and the other requirement, the better it is because they understand better the process as well. Communication is critical. So we are developing tons of dashboard because dashboard brings questions, right? Data, it's always there available. But how do we make it meaningful that we can ask questions? Transparency, it's also a huge goal and a huge conversation. And finally, it's a clear decision making, something that sometime, and to me is the lowest, going into back into the lean, the lowest level of decision making is the easiest, is where the decisions should be made. But having an understanding of who makes the decision, when the decision is to make, and how the decision has to be made, it's clear. So more planning helps throughout the process, and especially in situations like highly regulated organization, which it's not only me, but I'm sure every airport, but even the state or other public organizations.
And it was such an interesting pivot when I went from working on more of the federal RFPs to the first commercial general contractor I worked at, because the way we considered the requirements in those documents was very different because there are more suggestions on that side of the fence. And so, like you said, there's a little more runway to try different things. But once you set, I think, yourself up for success and everything you've just shared as far as that planning goes, you still get to innovate within the confines of the contracts you're in and those regulations. It's just a matter of understanding where that wiggle room is. And if you haven't thought about it enough, it's going to feel a little bit more difficult in the moment. You show up on site and you go, cool, can we bring a spot dog onto the project today? And nobody knows because you haven't talked about it soon enough. So yes, I appreciate that visibility. And that kind of leads into the next set of questions that I'd like to ask you about. In the last time we spoke, you had shared that your team is doing some really interesting things with digital twins, which is exciting to see considering the scale of the facilities that you're touching, but also just the future vision there. The idea of a digital twin is definitely not one rooted in today necessarily. It's one that's tomorrow and every day after that. And so I'd be interested to hear more about how your team got started when you were first considering this concept at Massport.
So we really started considering the digital twin idea in 2015, 2016. It's almost 10 years ago, can't believe it. And it is related to when we first issued our BIM guidelines, right? I always think that we need to have an ultimate goal in our horizon. You know, where are we trying to go? Otherwise, you'll get lost on the way. And in 2016, we issued an RFI, request for information, for a virtual campus. So in 2016, we had a very small, we just wanted to do it, connecting the model, linking the model. We had a lot of 2D drawings, trying to put it in 3D. I was shocked because, again, I was working on BIM since 2004. We got very few responses and very disappointing responses. So I'm like, okay. 2016, we are not there yet. So we internalized, we said, okay, let's us continue to research. Let's not forget. You can be a leader or you can be a follower, right? There are people that want to wait until someone else try it, is successful, and then they jump on their wagon. I am not that way. I like to try, fall, try again and fall again maybe, but then, and you know, that's I guess it's me. So in during COVID, we had the opportunity to, we realized, and this was 2020, we realized that we're more people interested within the organization. So in 2016 was only my department. And the goal was only to make efficiency for what we do, building. My idea was, okay, let's do a virtual campus. Then we have a 3D model of our facility. We have to do a renovation because, again, we don't have a lot of greenfield here. It's always a renovation. And Logan will give a piece of the model. Then the consultant's going to work, the builder is going to build, and then we plug it in back. That was the big idea in 2016. 2020, we realized that the technology has been advanced, and so we wanted to do something bigger. So there were people from facility, highly interested, people from IT, very interested in doing it. So we developed a small group, a small internal group, and we made, like everybody does, our own definition of what a digital twin is. And we had to do it because we realized with research that every organization has their own digital twin definition. So our digital twin is a virtual representation of physical assets across the life cycle that is meant to develop and enhance processes and technologies and to improve decision making, to optimize priorities assessment, right? What to do first and next, to manage our asset to retain knowledge. So we don't want to fix the problems of the world, but we want to make sure that at the end, we can do better decision, we can make better decision, we can manage our assets better, and then we retain the knowledge. So we looked into a different model, we research, and right now we are working on our VDC 2.0 master plan roadmap, and the ultimate goal is to get to a digital twin by 2028, I think.
It's encouraging to hear how your team has thought about that. And I really appreciate the focus on let's define this clearly for everybody. It's something that I try to do in the context of this program wherever I can, because it ensures that everybody who has a stake at the table is understanding the same concept in the same way. And so you're all marching forward in the same direction. And I also just very much appreciate how you're willing to try before other people do, because I think that's a very common scenario in the construction industry where people say, okay, somebody else did it. Now I'm going to, you know, jump on the bandwagon. So thank you for, you know, trialing this out for, you know, other progressive owners out there. I think it's a great just showing of being innovative and setting up that culture.
I'm always very happy to share our learning. Oftentimes I put all the stuff that we develop, we have we have the VDC, we have our own the last planner system minimum standard, because I'm like, okay, the highest standard, everyone, is too high, but I want the minimum that every project has to do. We develop this and we put it on the website. So in our massport.com, you can find all, even language, legal language that we develop for BIM implementation, lean implementation, because it's critical to me, the betterment of the industry. If I do it, I'll keep it to myself. I only get better. My goal is that we all get better, right? And after all, our projects, we should be able to share at least with our colleagues. I spend a lot of time talking to you and talking to other owners, which are always trying to push them, saying, come on, we can do it. We can do it together.
I love that transparency.
So sorry, interrupted.
No, it's okay, because it's an important nuance. And it's honestly, it's one of my favorite things about construction at large. But I really appreciate that innovative and openness in the construction industry, because it's been one of those things where obviously people aren't sharing their competitive insights, but they are still sharing things that help other people build better. And at a moment of tension, I guess we would say, in construction, as far as, our labor challenges, our supply challenges, and a myriad of other different things, that openness to help other people improve is something I appreciate so much. So we'll make sure to put a link to the Massport website in the show notes so people can go find some of the things you're sharing. But I'd like to come back to the vision for digital twins for just a minute. And I was hoping you could tell me more about what's your long-term aspiration for what that will bring to Massport? Like what are those big picture benefits you think you'll be able to implement when you get to the state of digitization that you're aspiring for?
Yeah, so to me, I can touch a couple of examples. So one is obviously predictive maintenance, right? Having the ability to go somewhere from anyone, not only from our department, also from the operation and the facility people, and try to understand how a building behaves. I say that buildings are like the human body. It's whatever you see, but there is a lot of, probably more importantly, it's what's inside, that it's not very visible. And the digital twin might be able to get an X-ray, really, of what's happening in the building. That will inform our capital investment and our capital investment plan, right? We do a rolling 5-year SIP. This year was the biggest Massport ever had, is a $2.7 billion. So, but how our facility are aging like everything else, and how do we make sure that we are prioritizing correctly those in a timely manner? Second, that is the easiest things. On the next spectrum is looking at security. Digital twin can help airports simulate different security scenario, right? And identify vulnerabilities in a digital world, and then be able to address it. It's a second example that to us is critical. Optimize passenger flow. So there are models that you can use now where you can simulate the passenger flows, and we can optimize the design to minimize the congestion. Now, is this happening? Yes, the process is there, but it's very fragmented. The idea is, my vision is that if we have it, we will be able to do it. Right now, there is a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's ad hoc. So we want to do how Terminal A behaves. Okay, need to get a consultant and blah, 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 and formalize it. I'm not saying that we will not have a consultant supporting us, but if we need just a high-level idea, we should be able to understand the behavior of our facility and make some prediction or make some type of assessment. Energy management, we have a huge net zero effort. What if we be able to assess and optimize energy usage, seeing how the buildings are actually behaving? So connecting with our controls. So those are, it's good to have dreams, right? And I'm sure someone much smarter than me will be able to make this happen.
Well, and I just think it's the right consideration to have, because you're giving your team more leeway to make some of those choices and have more information and data than they might have had otherwise. And you can even break it down into something more simplistic as far as just maintenance cost savings. When you know exactly what's where in your facility, you don't have to send somebody out to go, open up the light fixture, pull the light bulb down, get a lift jack. The laundry list is extensive. Instead, you're sitting at your desk and I know that these light bulbs are in this fixture right here, all those went out today.
Yeah.
I'm just going to order these now and ship them. And you don't have somebody up on scaffolding, you don't have any ambiguity, and you save a bunch of time as well. So it's very, you can think small potatoes as far as the value of digital twins, and then you can think very big picture too. And so building out that infrastructure and framework now has some big picture implications long term.
And if I can add, obviously, Eric, the first step is, and the easiest step to do all of this analysis is when you start building a facility or renovating. So I feel the responsibility that my department owns the beginning, the starting. Obviously, digital twin, there are different levels. The level 5 is the fully operational, as has to be led by the operating unit and by the facility. But we in capital program has to be able to give them a 3D infrastructure. So something that now it's typical in all our project is the reality capture. So we do laser scanning of, instead of sending consultant to get existing condition, we have laser scanning. We put out guidelines on laser scanning, and at the beginning as the existing condition, and at the end as well. So that at the end we have also an as-built, that it's a real as-built if you worked in the construction industry, you know how much you can trust the as-built consultant give you at the end of projects, right? But if we do a 3D scanning, probably it will be much more trustworthy. But it's a process that we need to be able to take. So again, we develop processes on when and how. And now, you know, if we talk about the laser scanning technology, the past 5 years, the cost is reduced immensely. And, you know, the actual technology, it's much better than it was 5 years ago. So we just need to be on top of this.
Yeah, it's always good to take a peek at something you've evaluated in the past to see how that's changed. And I've seen a lot of people who have a little bit outdated opinions on certain different, you know, either hardware or software tools. And that changes over time. It's like you alluded to, it's changed very rapidly. And so building on that, what do you think some of the biggest opportunities that organizations like Massport should be considering and planning for right now to meet that future need? So stepping out a bit more broadly than digital twins, like what are your, they can be aspirational opportunities, but what's the future state and what should we be doing now to ensure that that's actually a reality?
What I would like to start seeing is the multiple organizations working together to get to the smart city concept and smart city, you know, collaboration. The challenge, again, is not the technology, is the people and the mindset, but it will be fascinating if we could simulate, optimize city infrastructure. And then obviously our airport, we can start within Massport. We always say that Logan, it's like a little city, which is true. So we can start from our things, but if we get out from my only Massport hat and see what will be the benefit of, you know, it's infrastructure management, you know, connected digital twins can really help organization monitor, share information. And as much as I can see how I can predict the passenger experience, what if we could predict what a project down in, in Boston will impact and how will impact our infrastructure? That will be, again, if then I was dreaming from Massport, now I'm really light years away. But, you know, my kids' generation. But so it's the ability to have a flexible infrastructure. And when I talk about infrastructure, again, it's not only our own, but is the connectivity of multiple digital twins will be, you know, using augmented reality, collaborative design. It's all of this more futuristic way of managing, not an infrastructure, but multiple infrastructure.
And I think there's a really cool big vision there that we're, like as you alluded to, we're slowly starting to get there. There's nuances of it when we think about the smart city, the future-focused city. But there's so many choices that need to be made early to enable that. And your point earlier about, you know, being able to at least laser scan and retroactively document your existing facilities so they can make their way into the digital twin too. That's also an important nuance as you think about, like, how do we get ourselves to where we should be? Just because it's not a net new project doesn't mean you can't get that data in there. It's just there's a couple extra steps that, you know, are involved in making that happen. But it does speak more broadly. You can think digital twins and you think you set that up from the RFP stage onward, it's going to be easier. I think that applies broadly when you start thinking about more interconnected cities and facilities and such. So hopefully we start trending that way.
Yeah, and in that circumstance or situation, you need to start to have public-private partnership. It's not only the public sector, but we will have to talk to the larger private organization who have even utilities. It's not only us, the public sector. It'd be great if it's just the public sector, but and especially in a situation like Massachusetts, the state, it's very small. There are so many private organizations that have a humongous impact also on us that will have to be taken in consideration. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the one that has to make those decisions because the scale of that is it's significant. But you're right. I mean, especially in Massachusetts, the amount of historic facilities that exist and the existing infrastructure is how do you retain that authenticity, that real true historic value of the area, but also still offering this future-focused lens. But I think we could probably have an entire podcast episode based on just that conversation. So I've got two more questions for you today. And the first one is one I ask every single guest. And it's fun for me because I get to see, depending on the perspective, where you take it. And so it's a choose your own adventure. What is one tool that you'll always bring to every project you work on, regardless of the project?
Okay, so I don't know if that can be defined as a tool, but I bring with me the lean mindset. And I ask my manager to bring a lean mindset. So the way I see the world is I try to understand the value. So I take myself and I take it as a little research project. So what is the value? What does value mean for the customer? And I can bet every process, every project, and we talk about project is not only even developing this podcast is a project, right? It's understanding what does value means for the customer. And something that I stress and I always try to reconsider is to eliminating any assumption. Just because you have done one time, it doesn't mean that the second time. So I try to bring this fresh mindset head. The second is looking pure waste. What can we eliminate? Every process, we are doing it in a way that, you know, I'll go back to the 8 type of waste and saying, okay, how can we do better? Just because we have done it the same way last time doesn't mean that we have to do it again. And what can be eliminated to be more efficient? The third, it's a mindset of continuous improvement and continuous experimentation. So this is fundamental, is the learning mindset. I am happy if I learn something from a process. And it doesn't matter what process is, you know, a good day for me is a good day that I've learned something. And I'm trying to bring it. So I'm trying to learn. I ask questions on any project because I want to know more for a pure learning. And then finally, which is critical to me, the fourth pillar in some way of my lean mindset is respect for people. Everybody has to be treated with respect because everyone has a good idea. Respect for people as a person, but also respect for the thinking of people, because everybody brings the perspective of the project, of that process from their view. And it's critical to me to understand why they see something similar to me or different than me or completely opposite. And to me, goes back to the learning. I learned something different. So the lean mindset and split in value, waste, continuous improvement, experimentation, and respect for people are things that I always bring with me.
And that maps so closely to the culture conversation that we were having earlier as well. And when you set this up so intentionally and communicate that too, I think the big piece of that is ensuring that people understand that those are the values that you bring to the table and expect that they do as well. Nobody's going to understand that with, you know, without some very clear expectation setting alongside of it. But I am encouraged to continue hearing more meaningful conversations about lean and how it applies to construction. I think sometimes people kind of were dismissive years ago of, oh, manufacturing and construction are not the same. And we understand that they're most certainly not. But there are so many elements that we can apply to our industry. And I think the examples of that are increasing. And if you're not familiar with lean and you're listening right now, you should go back a couple episodes to my conversation with Ariana Alviar, who really dug in on how they're working on lean construction, because it has some value. But Luciana, I appreciate you sharing that. And I don't think anybody said lean as their tool yet. So that's a first, which makes me happy. It's good. So everybody out there listening, if they have any ways or if they wanted to reach out to you or had any questions or if there's anything you'd like to share, please give me a little more information. We'll make sure to include it.
People can easily go to our website, maspor.com, and they can go into the capital improvement piece or they can just follow me on LinkedIn. I can be easily found. My name and last name gives me away. More than happy to answer any further question. Eric, thank you very much. It was fascinating. I learned something new today. So it was positive. It was a good day for me. I learned something and very excited to be part of your Digital Builder podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, thank you for joining us for another episode of the show. Of course, I am your host, Eric Thomas. You can find me on LinkedIn as well or on Twitter at builder_digital. And if you do have a moment, if you could open up whatever you're listening to on Spotify, Apple, if you could rate us 5 stars, it does a lot for the show on the back end. And of course, we are a video podcast now. And so if you hop over to the Autodesk Construction Cloud YouTube channel, you can watch and follow along there as well. So if you haven't done that yet, make sure you do. And on that final note, goodbye.